Hey, everybody. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm Brian Henderson. And joining me, as always, from Madrid in Spain is Gabriel Quiroga.
Brian, my Barca brother from a different mother. How are you doing?
Oh, man, I have stories to tell you. How am I doing? Okay, so I'm in Boston right now. I had a birthday last week. On Wednesday, I turned 40 years old. And then at the same time, I was coming down with some illness. I had like a throat infection, which then moved to my nose, and I was running like a faucet. And then now it's moved into my chest, so I can't breathe very well, and I'm coughing a lot. So that's what's going on inside. But I'm in Boston as like a birthday present from my girlfriend Megan. So on Friday, I live in Buffalo, New York, which, believe it or not, is really kind of like a podunk provincial town in a lot of ways. We're at Buffalo Airport. We're trying to fly to Boston. The plane breaks, and there's just like no other way for us to fly to Boston on Delta from the Buffalo Airport. So we wind up driving to Boston that night. And so Megan, my girlfriend, and I, we were talking over our options, you know, like, well, they've delayed the flight until 6:30 a.m. tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, or so we could do that, or we could try and get on this other flight, which we did try to do, and we couldn't, you know, flying standby, or we could try renting a car and driving one way because we have a return flight, and then the renting a car was just ridiculously expensive. So I floated the idea, like, what if we just, you know, didn't go? Like, I'm in the middle of a semester here. I've got school going on. Like, I am busy. I have things happening. Plus, I actually don't want my birthday to be that big a deal. So, like, what if we just called it off and just didn't go? And she looked at me like I had, like, insulted her family. And she just insisted, okay, we're going. And it turns out that the reason we absolutely had to come to Boston for this trip was she got my three best friends in my life to be here when we got here. So these are like friends from California. And one lives in New York, one lives in Chicago, the other still lives in Southern California. But they're all friends from like Orange County days when I was living there, or San Francisco. And so it was like the best surprise in the whole world. My three best friends and I and Megan and my buddy Richard's fiance Gia we're all staying in a beautiful Airbnb here in Boston, right next to Boston College. And one of them is actually sleeping right outside. I can see him sleeping right now. So that's what's going on with me. And then I've also got all this illness. And like, so we didn't get into Boston until like 2 a.m. And then my friends opened the door. So I'm completely shocked and exhausted. So then we stayed up for another hour or so hanging out. So yeah, Saturday was a mess. But also, like, we did some walking tour stuff. We watched the Barcelona game at a cool place in Boston, or Cambridge, actually, called Phoenix Landing. It's a good spot if you're ever in the Boston area and you want to watch a football match. I would highly recommend it. They have tons of TVs, and they're very friendly staff. So yeah, that's how I'm doing. What's up with you?
Wow, that's a really great surprise. I mean, it's always great, you know, to have your friends come out like that and surprise you. Happy birthday, by the way. It's now we are officially into the 40-40 club here. So at the Barca Talk podcast, I'm doing good. I'm just, you know, just getting back from London. I got back from London on Tuesday and just kind of getting back into the routine of things as well. This weekend, I just took it easy and that's about it. I just watched the Barca game last night and I was just here at home and just trying to enjoy the last days of fall here in Madrid before it gets really cold here.
And you met up with someone in London that was that last minute, or tell us about who you met up with in London.
So yeah, there's another Barcelona podcast that does a really great job on their podcast. It's a little bit of a different style show than ours. So I don't, you know, I always have been in contact with them just through Twitter, just, you know, retweeting their content, and they do it for us as well. And one of their guys, Francesc, actually lives in London. And so we had talked a while and he said, you know, if you're ever in London, you know, DM me and we can get a drink and, you know, just hang out or whatever. And sure enough, I was in London. I didn't have anything to do. So we met up and we hit it off. He's a Catalan. He's a Barcelona through and through. We had a good time and, we actually did an interview, with each other where I interviewed Francesc for our show. I gave him the Andres Gomez, famous interview questions. And he also interviewed me for their podcast, doing a bunch of questions about my Kool-Aid them and fandom for Barcelona. So it was a really great experience to meet him in person and also just another fellow Kool-Aid, obviously, you know, first virtually. And then obviously now we got to meet up in physical 3D form.
Well, that's really cool. Yeah. And actually, we have that interview right now. Let's go ahead and listen to that interview between you and Francesc from the Barcelona podcast.
All right. So I'm here with Francesc from the Barcelona podcast. And so we just met up in London last weekend while I was attending the NFL game in London, and we decided to meet up since we're both fans of each other's podcast, and we met up in London to talk about our Barca fandom, and we thought it would be really fun to have kind of like a crossover interview slash talk about our favorite team, Barcelona. So, hello, Francesc. How are you doing?
Hola, Gabriel. It's great to talk to you again, man. It was a pleasure to meet you in London. And although it was brief, I sort of look back really fondly on the time we spent together. And as you mentioned, I've been an avid listener of your podcast for a long, long time now. Basically, since you teamed up with Brian, I think that you guys do a fantastic job and I am honored to be part of your show.
Well, thanks. And I think you guys do an amazing job with your news about Barca. I know you've been writing for the Barcelona podcast for a long time. How many years have you had the Barcelona, actually not the podcast, but the Barcelona blog? How long have you had that?
Well, we're about to get to 10 years now. It's barcablog.com is a website that we started. When everything sort of kicked off, there weren't many people writing about Barca in English. And now, obviously, that market is saturated. We still do it. And, you know, listeners can still go and find us there. But I thought, I think you thought as well earlier in the summer that there was a space for a Barcelona podcast to be up. So we just called it The Barcelona Podcast, which, you know, we're not very original like that. And we've been publishing ever since, really. We've got 45 episodes under our belt and the 46th episode's coming out next week.
Perfect, perfect. Yeah, so if you have a chance to check out another Barcelona podcast, I definitely recommend the Barcelona podcast. They do a great job of bringing the news and notes of Barcelona. And now they're going to be doing at the end of the week, once a week. So if you need a Barca fix at the end of the week, you can definitely check them out at the end of the week and then check our podcast at the beginning of the week. And hopefully that'll fulfill your Barcelona fix, as we like to say. So hopefully that'll help with fulfilling all your podcast needs. So we're going to kind of do this kind of free form. We're going to interview each other about different questions. I'm going to actually ask Francesc the famous Andres Gomez questions that we talked about in one of our recent podcasts. And then he's going to ask me some of his questions that he had for me. So I'm going to go ahead and start, Francesc, with the famous El Test questions from Andres Gomez. Are you ready for this?
Let's do it. Let's do it. I was so, it was hilarious, you know, when you guys did it. I was driving down to school in the morning and I was laughing to myself. So yeah, I'm honored to be doing the Gomez test.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully your answers are a little bit more exciting. So we'll see, Francesc. I know not a lot of pressure, but let's see how it goes. All right, so the first question of El Test is a city. So just tell me a city and why.
Barcelona, because it's the best city in the world and that's where I was born. And a certain Lionel Andres Messi seems to play for that team. So I think it's quite an obvious answer.
All right, so I think that's a great answer. So I'm pretty biased. I think Barcelona is a great city. It's definitely in my top five. So I would agree with that. All right, so question number two here. A place for you to disconnect.
Right, okay. I'm going to go for Huelva. Hopefully our listeners around the world hopefully they haven't heard of Huelva. Huelva is a coastal city, you would say a town, in southern Spain. That's where my mom is from. So my mom was born in Andalusia and then, you know, they moved up to Barcelona in their teenage years. It's a little bit like, say, Malaga, but without all the business. It's a fair drive from Sevilla. It's around 90 kilometers off to the south. And I strongly recommend that if you ever go to Spain, especially southern Spain, you check Huelva out. Although it is relaxing because not many people are there. So I would say check it out, but don't make too much noise.
Yeah, you want to keep it kind of a secret for yourself, right?
Yeah, so I'm going to backtrack that answer. It's not Huelva.
Exactly. So just to compare your answer to Andres Gomez said various. So we're just going to keep that in track, all right? So question number three, a movie. And I'll even put like your favorite movie. I'll even ask you that, your favorite movie.
Okay. I'm going to go for The Matrix. And I'm going to go for The Matrix because it was the first movie that I watched as a young grown-up and actually thought, yeah, this is sort of taking cinema to the next level. I like the fact that there are two realities sort of parallel to each other. It's got fantasy, it's got fighting scenes, and, you know, I wouldn't be a Barca fan if I wasn't a fighter myself. So I think that throughout my growing up years, I identified with Neo from The Matrix for a long while. Obviously, he's way cooler than me because I'm really not that cool at all. But I think that's my choice.
All right, so I think that's a good choice too. It has everything you kind of want, right? It has a little bit of romance, action, kung fu, really great fighting scenes. So I think it's a great choice. Just to compare your answer, Andres Gomez said, that's a great question, and he didn't know. So that's just the comparison. So we'll go on to the next question. tell us your favorite song.
My favorite song is Wonderwall by Oasis. Obviously, I think listeners of the podcast have already realized English is not my first language. I grew up speaking Catalan and Spanish at home because of what I explained earlier with my mom and my dad. My dad's from Catalonia. So I was learning English, not desperately, but I was beginning to be exposed. I loved the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air growing up. So I was always doing the Carlton dance around and pretending to be Will Smith with my funky t-shirts and shirts and, you know, the cap backwards and all that nonsense. But I think Wonderwall is the song that really hit that particular time of my sort of English development, really. And it got me interested in the language and the culture. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I moved to London in the first place, because I wanted to be cool, but like the Gallagher brothers and the Beatles. So I would say Wonderwall as well has a theme and has a sort of heart to it, which is all about improving, all about being idealistic and all about getting better in life. And that represents me quite well.
All right. So that's a good answer. I definitely am an Oasis fan. They were one of my bands that I followed when I was in high school because I'm a little bit older. But yeah, I definitely love Oasis. Yeah. So tell me, do you have a favorite Spanish song?
Good question. I like El Canto del Loco, which in English would be the songs of the crazy guy, which I don't know all of them. There are many. I'm going to go for Besos, which is kisses in Spanish. And that was one of the songs that whenever came on in the club when I was, you know, let's just say fishing, always led to spirited things. So I think Besos is a good choice. I also like the rhythm and I like its up-tempo and upbeat and, yeah, it represents me quite well as well.
All right, great. All right, so let's go move on to the next question. The next question is about reading. So your favorite book or maybe the last book you read. And just to compare, Andres Gomez said he didn't know. So I don't know if he reads or he knows how to read. I don't know. That's kind of a weird kind of answer. But well, Francesc, hopefully you have a more interesting answer than Andres Gomez here.
Well, I hope I do. I mean, I wouldn't have to try very hard to have a better answer than that, would I? So yeah, my favorite book, I've read obviously many books in my life, but the one that sort of stuck with me is a book called El Método Guardiola, which is the Guardiola Method. And basically, it combines everything I love. It's leadership and it is understanding of team and networking and the power of collaboration. So in the Método Guardiola, or El Método Guardiola in Catalan, you get to learn how Guardiola made Barca the best team in the world, but not necessarily from I positioned Messi on this position and then I told Iniesta to do whatever it was. It was more in depth in terms of how to build a team, make it stronger, and how to move things forward together as a team, not being a dictator, but being firm and fair with everything you do. So I think the person that I am today is, in a way, sort of up to the findings and reasonings and mechanisms described in that book.
Great. So that's almost like I would almost consider it like a CEO type of book, you know, a book that you read when you want to learn psychologically, also how to better your team, you know, so how to have the best performance out of your team. So that's a really great recommendation. I'm going to check it out. I haven't read the book, but I definitely would be interested in reading that type of book, especially learning more about Guardiola, because, you know, obviously Guardiola has, well, is, you know, remains as one of the top three coaches of all time in Barcelona history. So I think it would be a definitely an interesting read.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think also everything he brought to the club, you know, it's not necessarily the number of collected trophies, which obviously was insane. And I would like to say that it will be repeated again, but it's going to take many years for that to happen. I would say it's the way that Barca were playing at the time, you know, the collaboration, the fact that La Masia was at the heart of the team, players coming through with him, like Busquets and Pedro, obviously getting the best out of Xavi and Puyol, and obviously Messi coming through, being able to nurture sort of the surroundings of Messi. So having Eto'o and Ronaldinho playing a mentorship role, but obviously not overshadowing his progression. I thought that Guardiola, because of his methods, because of his philosophy, but also the players he had at his disposal, also the fact that the board at the time really did know what they were doing, signing players like Yaya Touré and Abidal, and even Seydou Keita, was crucial and key for that team to be successful. Then obviously signing Villa and, you know, many players that improved the team over the years and make them, in a way, the best team in football history.
Great. And I, you know, since you're, as we talked when we were in London, that you are a massive Lakers fan, the former coach of the Lakers, Pat Riley, wrote a really great book that's very similar to this book. And it's called The Winner Within. And he talks about the same type of characteristics. So I think if you take the most famous, most successful coaches, they have kind of the same path or attitude towards their players and their team. So I'll recommend you the book, The Winner Within, it's called, from Pat Riley, since you're such a big Lakers fan.
Well, there we are. That's a proper exchange there. You read my book, I'll read yours.
There you go. Perfect, perfect. All right, so we're going on. We only have a couple questions left here. So I'm going to ask you, since especially now that you live in London and you've been away from Spain for a while, so give me your favorite Spanish food or your favorite typical Spanish food that you miss living in London.
Okay, so from London, we, in a way, we've got everything now. There's supermarkets that have like Spanish week, like Lidl and Aldi, they've got that sometimes. So in a way, not a lot, because anything that I need, I can get. But there's one thing that we don't really get much in here. There's two things. One of them is Colacao, which is like Nesquik, like a chocolate powder, which you can make milk with. And every Spaniard and every Catalan person in London normally cries when they see a pot of Colacao around, because obviously it's also very identifiable, you know, it's bright yellow with a bright red top. So that would be one, but being a Catalan, I think fuet is the one that we really miss. It's a type of chorizo, but sort of Catalan version of it, and it's far less, I would say, spicy. So that is something that I do miss, and it's the first thing that I go to the fridge too when I come back home, and my mom obviously knows and she's got it ready. So yeah, definitely that.
Yeah, so fuet is one of those things that I love living here in Spain, that you can get it anywhere. You know, you can get it at any grocery store. And it's one of those things it's super dangerous for me, because I think I can eat almost 6 kilos of it without even noticing, because it's so easy to eat, right? It's not spicy. It's just really good flavor, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's also a lot of kilos that you just said, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Six kilos is quite a bit.
I mean, if I'm at a party and it's there, I said, oh no, look out, because that fuet has no chance.
And everyone knows and they run away, isn't it?
Exactly. All right, so the next question we have here is, we have a historical person, but I'm going to ask you in a more different way. I'm going to ask you your favorite historical football player outside of Barcelona, outside of FC Barcelona.
Outside? Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say Johan Cruyff, but I think it's quite clear that he played for us. I would say that would be someone who changed the game. But then again, I was going to say Rijkaard, but he plays for Barca as well.
Well, let me ask you this, Francesc. Is, you know, most of your, when you were growing up playing and watching football, was it always centered first around FC Barcelona and then Spain second? Or how did that work out when you were younger following football?
Yeah, that's certainly how it went. I was going to the Camp Nou from a very young age. I was fortunate enough that my family always sort of were following Barca and they wanted me to be a follower as well. And going to the Camp Nou with my grandpa when I was really young really helped. Then my brother played for Barca himself in the under-12s. He was teammates with Andrés Iniesta. And I was lucky enough to go to every single match that season. So all the historical people that I look up to throughout football history pretty much belong to Barca. Johan Cruyff obviously being the master of everything that we are today. And really influential coach, manager and player when he came as a player as well, because he changed the destiny of the club back then. But obviously what he did in the 90s and resulted in everything that we know today, winning the first Champions League for the club, educating Guardiola and Guillermo Amor and players like that who are right now a sporting director, a very successful manager, and then, you know, everything came from them. So I think figure outside of Barca, I can't really think of anybody because the people that I'm thinking are Real Madrid, and I'm not going to choose a Real Madrid person to say in this podcast. So you've got chance.
Do you have a favorite dream team player?
My favorite dream team player was Stoichkov. Because of the
Francesc, I think we're brothers because Stoichkov is one of my favorite players of all time.
There we are, we're brothers from another mother, there, isn't it?
Risto
Stoichkov. Yeah, I liked him because obviously he always left everything he had on the pitch. You know, he was taking no nonsense. He was always direct. He would step on referees if that needed doing. Really passionate. I remember watching him live in the Camp Nou, and he always widened the pitch and he would stand right on top of the line in order to sort of drive forward, most of the time connecting with Romario. I mean, the 2-3 years they had together was legendary, and I haven't seen anything like it. I've seen things differently, obviously, with Messi and Eto'o and Ronaldinho and Villa, etc. But the way that they connected was unique because Romario was not your usual number nine, your tall striker who dominates, e.g. Ibrahimovic. He was tiny. He wasn't as speedy as Messi, but he was incredibly gifted in tight spaces. And Stoichkov was, in a way, the opposite. He was power. He was determination, relentless, always dominating the ball. And, you know, in front of goal, he was lethal. He was selfish when he needed to be, but he was always combinative as well. So I would say between Stoichkov and Romario, that's a partnership we've never seen again.
Yeah, I mean, when I first heard of Stoichkov was in the 1994 World Cup. Since I lived outside of Barcelona, you know, I wasn't a Barcelona fan at that moment yet. And I'll never forget because, you know, I've always, you know, since I'm American, I followed U.S. soccer for a long time. And Mexico is like the Real Madrid for me for our national team. And I'll just never forget, Stoichkov had one of these most amazing counterattack goals you ever see in World Cup history against Mexico, where he upper 90'd this ball on the run with his powerful left foot. And I remember watching and I said, who is this guy? And when I look back at it, I was like, it's amazing now that he was part of the dream team. And since I was left-footed, I always dreamed that I could have a powerful left foot just like Stoichkov. Unfortunately, it was probably maybe 40% of that, if that. So
I'm sure you had plenty of quality anyway, man. I remember that game too. It was obviously he had already won the European Champions League for us 2 years before that. And I remember when Stoichkov signed that no one really knew what he was going to do. But that is the thing compared to the current board of Barca. Back then, with Johan Cruyff and the, you know, technical directors behind him, you could always sign a player who most people hadn't heard of. Obviously, it wasn't the social media-driven world that we live in today. And then, surprisingly, sort of get into the very top of world football. So, undoubtedly, these days, football has changed. And the current board are not really able to do things like that, which is a shame, isn't it?
Definitely, definitely. All right, so really great. Let's see, you know, it's like one of those things sometimes, you know, when you just have favorite players like this, you just, your bond becomes stronger. So, Francesc, I think we're becoming stronger friends over the weeks already, you know, just from talking, meeting in the pub, and now our love for Risto Stoichkov.
Of course, man. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And being able to talk to the listeners of your podcast is an honor. So, yeah, we're going to do the interview the other way. So I'll feature you on our podcast. That's the Barcelona podcast. And yeah, I can't wait to do that either. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you soon, Francesc.
Of course, man. Thank you.
So you've proven, as we have theorized, you've proven that just about anybody with a pulse could do better and be more interesting on this quiz than Andre Gomez was, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I had a fun time meeting up with Francesc at London, having a couple pints, talking about Barcelona and our history of Barcelona, and also another great time speaking with him for the podcast. So hopefully we'll speak further. And he's actually going to have a child any day now. So hopefully congratulations on the newborn coming up as well.
Oh, absolutely. Congratulations to Francesc, and hope that goes well. Moving on, you know, it's been kind of a slow week as far as news goes at Barcelona, but in Spanish football overall, there is this there is a new story to come out. This just came out on Friday. Apparently, La Liga is going to add video-assisted referees next year, and that's according to the president of the RFEF, Juan Luis Larrea. Tebas, the president of La Liga, and La Liga have not commented on this yet, but Serie A and Bundesliga, they both use video-assisted referees already. So La Liga, if they do transition to using VARs next year, they will be joining in with the other major European leagues. So what do you think about this?
I mean, it's about time. You know, that's the thing. Like, if you want to be a top 3 or 4 league of football in the world, you have to have this implemented. It's a must, especially with big games. World Cup does it. Champions League has it. This is just something that should have been done already 3 years ago. It just gives the referee more power and more evidence to make the correct call. And that's what you want. I know a lot of people always say, well, I kind of don't want to have video replay because it'll slow the game down. But for me, it's a results-oriented business. I want to have the correct call. And obviously, if you have the video to do it and to reverse a call that is incorrect and make the correct call, then I'm all for it. You know, in every league in the States, they have instant replay in some sort. And yeah, it slows the game down, but at least you are guaranteed the correct call. That's my feeling on it. How about you? What do you feel about video assisted refereeing?
Well, I saw VAR in use, I think, during an international friendly last year, and it got used twice, once to confirm a call, once to turn over a call. And the main thing that that I would be worried about with VARs is, yeah, the way that it would like interrupt the game. And it slowed it down a little bit, but not that much. It was maybe half, you know, maybe 30 seconds. It wasn't a big deal. I mean, here in the States with now they have, you know, replay or, you know, review in baseball, which is already a slow ass game. And then, you know, issues with video replay in American football and all this sort of stuff. Like, the problem with it for me is that the broadcasters make it such a big deal. If you actually are just like a little bit cooler about it, the way it plays out in real time is actually fine. And as far as how I've seen it being used in proper football or soccer, it's fine. I think it's better to have the right call, and I just don't want games to be delayed for 3-5 minutes or anything like this while they're trying to make a call. Apparently, the way that it's restricted to the circumstances under which they can use it, which I already like. You know, just like really the kind of really high stakes calls. You know, you're not gonna have video review for every possible call. That's good. You have trained referees who are looking at the video, so it's just more referees, more cooks in the kitchen on that end. So maybe that's bad, right? Because maybe the answer is not more referees. I don't know, but maybe it is.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just like, okay, there's so much TVs now, right, for the game that they should be able to see the angles if the ball crosses the goal. You know, that's really what it only comes down to, that I would want to use the VAR more, just if the ball crosses the line, because, you know, the action happens so quickly. And so just getting the right call, it doesn't take that long. It's, you know, you have the video replay and just go on with it. That's it. That's all I really want it for.
Yeah, and it's a little bit different from the goal line technology that has been in use, like in FIFA, but it's literally just video replay. A referee looks at it, they make a call, or, you know, they'll either confirm or turn over. And, you know, nowadays the referee has the headset, so they can communicate easily, and it can all like flow pretty nicely with the game. So yeah, I think it's a good move to make, and it'll make the game better.
I mean, the only way it's going to get better is if they actually make it live, right? Because then you get input from the referee, from the players, and you get the flow of the game and say, okay, next year we need to cut it down even more. But if you never implement it, you can never test it and never improve it. So these are the type of things that we need to do. You know, this not having the replay and the marketing for La Liga are the two things that are keeping it behind like the EPL and the Bundesliga from being a super, super league, you know, to rule the world almost, you know, because these are the type of things that EPL always does really well is their marketing, and they're always on top of technology.
Yeah. And apparently they're going to run about 70 tests before they actually implement it next year. But so we'll see how that plays out next season. Moving forward, we have a lot of listener comments to get into this week. In fact, I'd say most of the episode today is going to be responding to listener comments. Some of these have kind of backed up over the last couple of weeks, and I wanted to bring some of these in. So first up, we have a message from Azmi. He got in touch with us on our Facebook page. He says, "Hey guys, thank you for all the excellent work. Can you please speak about Deulofeu and how amazing he's been so far this season, and especially in that Copa del Rey match? I mean, that pass assist was perfect. The goal, I think he deserves more credit. He needs to start every game. This guy is a beast, and we need to show support. Thank you, guys. I'm looking forward for the next episode."
Yeah, thanks, Azmi, for the comment. Well, you know, Deuces has been playing okay. Like, I wouldn't say spectacularly, but I put in my notes here. I don't know if you saw it earlier, but I put here, Deuces is the perfect Copa del Rey player. And what I mean by that is that it was a great goal he had in the Copa del Rey match, that pass assist and stuff. But those are things that those players have never really seen, that type of movement, that type of speed in real life. And so Deuces can kind of like use it as his testing ground, right? The Copa del Rey match is to test out new moves, new things. And so for me, he's a perfect Copa del Rey player. Yeah, I would like to see him play a little bit more, but I also don't think he's had the greatest season. He's trying to make his way, you know, getting more comfortable with Suarez and Messi, and also what Valgrin is asking him to do. But, I mean, he looked great in the Copa del Rey match, but you also have to remember who he is playing against as well.
Yeah, and in that Copa del Rey match, you notice that he tried that same move, this move that he's always trying to make, you know, where he's facing inward toward the goal. He's got the defender stalled, and it's not a bad move that he has. The only thing is everyone knows he's going to go to the right. He's going to go to the end line. He never goes left. So, I mean, his movement is fine, but even then, the Murcia defenders were able to catch him out most of the time. And he tried that move 8 or 9 times in that match, and most of the times it didn't work because they just knew that he was going to go to the right. It doesn't matter what he shows them. He always goes to the right, so he becomes predictable. And you put him in a match against, you know, a more heavy-hitting team, and they're going to tear him apart with that every time. I mean, Murcia did. So I do think that he's a good player, and I do think that he needs to get more minutes and more experience, and he is going to improve if he gets more playing time. And I don't see why that won't happen. I mean, Valverde is going to probably start rotating more once Dembélé is back from injury. We might see Deulofeu a little bit less. He's starting to rotate Gomez into the front three, which is a befuddling and baffling thing that we'll talk about later. But, you know, I do think that Deulofeu is good, and he should be getting, you know, continue to play. And he will. But he needs to go left at least half of the time, even if it's not going to work, even if he's not confident. He needs to just do it, so that he can throw off a defender once in a while.
Yeah, he needs to do the counter to the counter, right? Like, that's the thing. And, you know, I feel like he's going to be a really influential player down the road, especially in bigger games with 10 minutes left in the game, where we need to press even more and press that defense to make them respect that right corner. And Deulofeu can do that. So, you know, I definitely think he's going to get more time, more minutes. I just don't think he's going to always be the starting when it's a tough match. And, you know, you have to think about this, that Deulofeu, this project is, you know, this is his first year back fully with the senior team, and hopefully gains experience and better confidence that next year he'll even be better, and he'll hopefully have a counter to the counter to the counter.
Yeah, do you see him maybe developing, like, if things go well, I could see him developing into not playing like Pedro, but being at least a reliable enough contributor to the team that Pedro was when he was playing at Barcelona.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. Especially just like finding that right wing position. And especially, you know, Barcelona has so many games, you know, that's the thing. Barcelona's unlike, you know, any other clubs, you know, because they play in Copa del Rey, Champions League always. Like they never have that uncertainty of, oh, they might play Champions League. No. So there's always going to be time, minutes for these players to develop even more. So that's a good comparison, Brian. I like that. Pedro, like almost like a better, stronger version of Pedro. And hopefully, you know, just with some more time and patience, De La Feo can develop into that type of player.
Yeah. And then maybe Chelsea will pick him up and then we'll replace him with, you know, some other young winger. Now, of course, by that point, Messi will probably be gone, and then it'll be a whole different dynamic in the squad that would have to work around. But anyway, let's move on to let me just thank Azmi again for that question. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening and for all your support. Moving on to another question. This came from Carlos in Houston via our Facebook page. He says, "We're not playing a beautiful style like we're all used to, but we're winning, and that's what matters. I'm sure we'll pick up our style as the games go by. Visca Barça." So my initial response to this is he's absolutely right. We're not playing the kind of beautiful football that I think we've grown accustomed to. And I was wondering, because I became a fan of Barcelona right in that era where they were playing probably some of the most beautiful football they've ever played. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's debatable, but certainly in recent history, some of the most beautiful football when, you know, you had Xavi, Iniesta, in the midfield. Well, and Busquets. Of course, you had Messi. And then, like, right when David Villa came in, they were just playing this with Guardiola managing, of course. So you have just such florid, beautiful, one-touch football. It was some of the most beautiful stuff. And no, we're not reaching that level of aesthetic quality, but we are getting results with Valverde. I mean, this year has been an amazing year so far. And I just wonder, like, were we just spoiled for all those years? Like, can we really expect a Barcelona team to play that beautifully? I think that was really a golden time for the like attractiveness of their football. I think they're still playing good looking football. They're still playing Barcelona football, you know, and they're also getting results. But what's your idea here?
Well, let me ask you this, Brian. Would you prefer to win, you know, how we've been winning and it's not the most aesthetically pleasing style? Or like last year where we had glimpses of, you know, the 4-3-3 and we didn't adjust and we lost some games? I mean, what do you prefer?
I mean, I prefer, actually, you know, I have mixed feelings because I'm an artist and I love beauty. I don't mind a loss here and there. I mean, of course I want to win. I like winning. I like when Barcelona wins. But I'm also okay if they lose, as long as it isn't through stupid mistakes, you know, just like bad playing. And I think a lot of our losses last year were results of that. I like watching the game at its most aesthetically pleasing, but that's just my own like predilection. But I understand the point here that like that what matters are the results in sport. That's always going to be the case. My only point on this was really just to point out that, yeah, maybe we aren't playing as beautiful a style as we used to, but that's never going to be a guarantee. We got really lucky for a number of years with both results and beautiful football, you know, and like, of course, we'll take the results over the beauty. You have to prioritize. And I get that that the results and wins take priority over good looking stuff.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like it's not, for me, it's not the ugliest football. It's not like we're watching like lower tier EPL style football, like where we're just, you know, chucking the ball up, chasing it, and then they're chucking the ball back to us, you know, that type of thing. For me, I've been very pleased with Val Green's decision making. I mean, you know, if our only complaint, especially like on social media, is that we can't agree on the lineup, then we don't really have that many problems right now. You know, we're still always baffled with the Andres Gomez selection and this, but we're winning. And so if that's our only argument, our only contention with Valgrind, then I'm okay with that. The players seem to be responding. Like last night against Athletic Bilbao, that was going to be a tough match, and we pulled the points. And with the midfield, if you would have told me in the summertime, then the midfield of Rakitic, Busquets, Paulinho, and Andres Gomez, and we would have been 2-0 at the San Mamés, I would have been like, you're crazy. But they were able to do that, you know? That time of the 4-3-3 spectacular era with Pep Guardiola is never going to happen again. So everyone needs to just remember that. That's never going to happen again. We can aspire to that type of style and possession and that type of thing, but that beauty, that type of games, that span, we will never have that again. So, you know, for me, you know, we want to win trophies, and to win trophies, you have to win matches. And our only rival is Real Madrid, and we have to keep atop and keeping that pressure. So we're going to see, you know, still early in the season, right? We still are trying to figure out Valgrind's tendencies and so forth. And yeah, it's not the most beautiful style, but we're winning. And to me, that's always going to be the most important thing as a Barcelona fan.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And like you said, we're never going to see a team like we did under Guardiola again. Or if we do, it's going to be a long, long time. That's a statistical anomaly. Now, this is a fun one. This came from Miguel, and he reached out through Instagram. And this is, it's a very, like, getting to know you. This is like a Gomez quiz kind of question. But Miguel asks, what are your top five Barca players? Mine are 1, Puyol, 2, Messi, 3, Ronaldinho, 4, Xavi, and 5, Henri. And I think that it's telling that he puts Puyol ahead of Messi. That's so just in response to Miguel's list, I think that's a bold and good decision. So, Gabriel, let's start with you. Who are your top five Barca players?
Yeah, so my top five Barca go in order. Number 1, Ronaldo, Fat Ronaldo, because he was my first hook, line, and sinker to Barca. Number 2, Messi. Number 3, Rivaldo. Number 4, Puyol. And number 5, Ronaldinho.
That's a good list also. You have some old school players in there because, like, you have more background in history. My initial response to this question, honestly, is my top five players for Barcelona are Xavi, 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 and Xavi. I love Xavi. Like, if there's one person on this planet who is single-handedly responsible for me loving FC Barcelona, it is Xavi. I just love the way he played. I love the way he did everything that he did, his vision, his touch, the way he could own the midfield, just everything about him. I loved him. To actually come up with 5 different names. Obviously, Xavi's number 1. And since I got into Barcelona around 2010, most of my picks are going to be fairly recent picks. So Xavi, Iniesta, love Puyol also. I miss Puyol so much. And honestly, like it took some time for me to really understand how great he is, but Busquets and Abidal, Eric Abidal, man. He was great. Like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's a toss-up between Abidal and Dani Alves. Because Dani Alves was such a great right back. But Abidal was an amazing left back. And yeah, so like those are more recent. But that's my top 5.
It's still a great top 5. You know, I mean, let's take your top 5 against my top 5 and roll them out and see who wins, right? Like, it'll be a great match. And both teams would be amazing to watch. Yeah, mine are just a little bit more old school because that's, you know, those are my first memories. Just like your first memories of Barca are more recent. Those are the players that I just fell in love with watching Barcelona from afar.
Now, a follow-up here. Miguel had another little point. And this is some conspiracy theory stuff. I love it. He says, I found it curious that Puyol 2.0's number is 23. So we're Umtiti is now Puyol 2.0 for us. So 2 plus 3 equals 5. Umtiti equals Puyol. Do you think there's any significance to that numerology?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, how could you not say it's not huge, right? I mean, when I saw this, right. I was crying because I just thought that's like so amazing, right? Like it's so creative to come up with this and even think about it. But I mean, you know, yeah, it's just a great coincidence, but maybe it's not. We don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah, he really is. I'm so thankful for Umtiti. I'm actually going to talk about that when we get into talking about the athletic match, but
I have a quick question. I have a quick question for you. In Thanksgiving, will he be one of the things you are thankful for?
Yeah, I think he will.
You're like, I want to thank, you know, my parents, my girlfriend, and Umtiti. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for breaking up all those plays. I really, really appreciate it. I'm very thankful. So here's a couple older ones that I wanted to get to, and they're still relevant, so I don't think there's any problem with bringing these up. So this first one also came through Instagram from Aaron. He says, "Hey there, I listen to your podcast every Monday morning while I'm at work, and it keeps me entertained. I could listen to you guys for a whole day." Thank you, Aaron, but you're insane. Anyway, he says, "I think a good talk point for you to discuss would be about whether Barca should have bought Aguero instead of Suarez. Very good friend of Messi, and I distinctly remember Messi wanting him there. Good passing play, the Barca way, and arguably the best striker in the Premier League. Thanks, guys." So what do you think? Aguero rather than Suarez? How would that bizarro world have played out?
Yeah, who knows, you know? I mean, they just bring two different types of styles of play. I definitely think Aguero would have fit very easily into the Barca style. I just think that Suarez being kind of the bull in the china shop is something we need that is the antithesis of our elegance in passing with Messi. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, we've documented and talked about in the recent games how his first touch is horrible and all these things. But, you know, in those 2 years with Luis Enrique, he provided so many other things that created so much more chaos for the defense. However, seeing Aguero in the 4-3-3 would have been pretty spectacular because he is a special player. And also he would have had that chemistry with Messi, that Argentine, you know, just a code word, you know, almost like a wind talker style type of thing, you know, playing out there. So I think, you know, Aguero would have been amazing, but I don't think that Leti would have ever sold it to us for a reasonable price. So I think going after Suarez was eventually the best thing. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that was absolutely the best way to go. And it, you're right. Yeah, it would have been good. Almost predictable, though, to get Aguero in there. You know, he's very slick. And, of course, you know, he and Messi have that Argentine telepathy going on. But I think you're right that what Suarez offers in his physicality and his unpredictability is actually a good thing because yeah, if you have too much of the same thing, you become predictable. And Aguero was almost, yeah, he's almost too smooth, too elegant to like mix anybody up, to like confuse a defense. Suarez is such a wild, he's such a loose cannon, like pretty literally a loose cannon. You just don't know what's going to happen, and there's a benefit to that.
Yeah, I mean, both players are great, right? I mean, you're asking for, you know, Aguero is one of the top scorers in the EPL. So plugging him into Barca, I'm sure he would have had great success because, you know, his experience in La Liga, knowing the defense, working with Messi, you know, just having that chemistry. Aguero has obviously a better first touch and passing ability than Suarez. But again, like you just said as well, Suarez's unpredictability leads to this chaos that helps us in attack as much. You know, I just wish that he would limit his offsides. Those are just my biggest pet peeves with him. You know, his offsides and maybe his biting. I don't know.
Well, he's been much better with the biting ever since he came to Barcelona. As far as I know, he hasn't bitten anybody
that we know of.
Well, at least not during a game. I don't know what he does in his off time. But anyway, thank you, Aaron, for that question. That was a fun scenario to hypothesize about. The next one and last one comes from ZachAttack14 on Instagram. He says, and this is funny because this is like old, but it still is absolutely applicable to what's been going on. He says, "Hi, guys, just finished the Atletico game and had a question. I know Gomes has had a lot of criticism since he joined, but he seemed to play a solid game today and good link up with Suarez and Iniesta. Do you think the criticism is excessive? And B, what are your opinions on him possibly getting more playing time in the position he played today with our injuries? Also have to give a shout out to my fellow fanboy on Sergi Roberto's cross." So, yeah, fellow fanboy moment right there. So if we do think the criticism is excessive, then we have to check ourselves on this because we're doing an awful lot of criticism of Gomes. And as far as getting more playing time in that position he played against Atletico, it seemed really wrong to us. I think we agreed that he did not belong on right wing.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, right? Like, this is going to be the contention, I think, all season, because, like, I got a Twitter message from one of our listeners, from Abdullah, and he also had a really great point about Andres Gomes. He had a Graham Hunter quote. Do you know who Graham Hunter is?
Yes.
Yeah, he's like a journalist here in Europe. He covers Barcelona and Spain. Here's the quote. It's just talking about how, you know, that Andres Gomes isn't, like, quote unquote, a bad player, but he's just a slow player. Like, everything just happens in slow motion. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, this is always going to be our contention over the lineup, you know, because, like, for example, in last night's match, you know, why not Semedo? Why not Sergio Roberto, your boy? Andres Gomes, like, just kills me out there. I mean, like, yeah, you know, statistically, if you look again, probably made decent passes, had a high accuracy, but he doesn't give you anything. Like, he's not, like, now I can see Pauly is physically strong, and I can physically, you know, I can see during the matches what he brings, right? It's like Andres Gomes is like some guy that they just, like, lost on a bet or something, and they had to bring him onto the field, you know? It's like, I don't know what he has over Valgrin, but I mean, you're telling me that, like, for example, last night, just having Sergio Roberto instead of Andres Gomes, how much more dynamic and more possession we would have had? Would have been a completely different game. So, yeah. So, this is always going to be something we're going to address, I think, all season long, especially if Valgrin continues to use him in the big games. So, I don't know. I mean, you know my feelings on this guy, and I know your feelings. I mean, what else can we do? Can we say? What do we expect from Valgrin going forward with Andres Gomes? I mean, I prefer him, obviously, in the 4-4-2 as a midfielder, because he doesn't have to be a dynamic guy, you know? But in a 4-3-3 as a winger, that's just, like, no hope. No hope.
Yeah. Now, in the game against Athletic Bilbao that we just watched yesterday, he was he was playing sort of half the time as a midfielder and another part of the time as sort of a left winger. And I think that actually did work out better tactically than putting him in right wing, mainly because of how just lopsided the whole team was towards the right. Because, like I mentioned before, Messi was over on the right, and then you've got Suarez trying to, like, drift out to the left, ended in positions where he's not going to be able to do what he does best. So getting Gomes out there on the left, at least, still not being dynamic, because I don't think that's his thing.
No, it's not.
But just being there so that Suarez can stay central, that was at least slightly better. And, yeah, the fact that he was kind of doing one of two roles and shifting back and forth. But you have to, of course, recognize that the moment that Semedo came in for Gomes and Sergi moved into a more forward position, midfield / attacking, everything changed, and I think for the better. But in any case, we appreciate the question, ZachAttack14. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. But before we get into the first team and their activities over the past week, let's check in with Barca B and the women, as we are wont to do now, because I think it's important that we represent them on the show. So what happened with Barca B this last week, Gabriel? I wasn't really paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, today they just finished up playing, because we're recording here Sunday, my time, 3 p.m. here, Madrid time. They just tied with Sevilla 2, 1-1. So they're still right in the thick of the table, right where we want them to be. They have 14 points, so they didn't lose. So hopefully they just continue on to this this trajectory of just staying in the Segunda, getting more experience, and then hopefully with Alenia and Arnaiz getting more playing time, that they'll get better call-ups, and as we saw against the Murcia game, they produce. So hopefully with the Barca B, they just continue to, you know, either tie or win and just stay in the Segunda. So looks good so far.
Who scored the goal for Barca B?
Yeah, Carlos Alenia scored in the third minute. So him and Arnaiz are just carrying the Barca B, and just they look like they are the real deal. So hopefully with more Copa del Rey matches and more Segunda Division experience, they'll be on the trajectory to being on the senior team in no time.
Yeah, and that's perfect. So when we talk about the Murcia match in just a few minutes, we can talk about Alenia and Arnaiz and how they're contributing. So, yeah, but they keep pretty much running the B team, doing all the scoring. That's fantastic. Now, what about the women? I've just had a really crazy week. What's going on with the women, Gabriel?
No worries, Brian. You know, my back is hurting from carrying this team. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. You know, last week when I was in London, you know, we're just a good team like this. So, for the women today, they are playing against Atleti Madrid. And, at the time of recording, they haven't played yet, but they are both tied at the top spot of La Liga Femenina with 18 points. So we'll see if they can pull out that victory. And then also this week, Lika Martins was crowned the best, you know, my favorite award show, from FIFA. You know, Lika is like picking up awards left and right, especially since she led the team, her Dutch team to the European Championship. But also it was kind of an interesting thing. I on social media, you know, FIFA with this best, award show, for me, it's kind of a nightmare. But also for the women's side, two of the players that they picked for the best, great picks. Carly Lloyd, American, top player, and Lika Martins, top player. But the third player was this player from a second division American team that no one had really, I mean, people have heard about it, but not worldwide. She's a Venezuelan girl, Dania Castellanos. And part of the problem is that she's an unknown player to be nominated for FIFA Best, which a lot of people, especially a lot of women's players, were up in arms about, because if this would have happened on the men's side, you know, imagine they would say Messi, Ronaldo, and Todd Jones from the Dallas FC second division in the United States would be like, what's going on here, you know? But there wasn't even any kind of uproar with that selection. So FIFA still a little bit behind with the women's, you know, selection and giving the women some credibility. But again, good for Lika Martins. She's obviously having a great year this year.
Yeah, and she is just on fire. If you watch the highlights of the women's side, I mean, I wish we had a left winger like her on the men's first team, honestly. Like, she's great when she's coming down that left wing. She can nutmeg defenders. She's got great moves and good pace and just a really good touch and great passing. So, yeah, I think it's a great pick. But, yeah, this Dana Castellanos, I mean, that pick is so weird. And yeah, it just flies under the radar because the women's game is still, you know, considered like a second class kind of thing, which is unfortunate. And I personally strongly advocate for, you know, elevating the women's game. It's just as good as the men's, and especially now it keeps getting better and better. And you can see amazing technique. Like, maybe they don't play like as physically, or they aren't quite as strong sometimes, but the technique is there, and it's wonderful football to watch. Like, you can see that whenever the Women's World Cup rolls around, you know? But let's go ahead and transition into the men's game and La Liga. So checking in with La Liga as it stands, again, we're doing this before all the matches have been played. But as far as we know right now, we've got Valencia at 24 points. They beat Alaves 2-1 on Saturday night, and they also are unbeaten in the last six matches. The only other team who's unbeaten so far is Barcelona. They had goals by Zaza and Moreno. And right now, we're recording this before Real Madrid have played. They're going to be going to Girona later today. And they also have a big Champions League match on Wednesday against Tottenham with an injured Harry Kane. So I guess Harry Kane's not going to be playing in that. So we don't know what the outcome of Real Madrid's match against Girona is going to be, although I think we can fairly safely assume they will win. And there is a lot of political stuff going on in Catalonia right now. I don't know how that might play into it. Girona is sort of a small town, but it's a very pro-independence town. So I don't know if that might get into the heads of the players of Real Madrid or not. Of course, I hope Real Madrid loses, but the likelihood is that they'll probably grab a win. Then there's also Atletico Madrid, who are also at 20 points. They tied Villarreal on Saturday 1-1 with a nice goal by Angel Correa. And, oh, Gabriel, do you say your friend went to this game, right?
Yeah, one of my friends went yesterday, and he got tickets to the match. And so he went, and I was like, oh, so tell me, you know, how was the stadium? How was the – he's just like, the game was super boring. And I was like, oh, okay. So he said, you know, they grabbed the first goal, so they were up 1-0, and then Villarreal tied it. But if you guys check out the highlights of the Angel Correa goal, it's a really nice. His first touch on that goal is wicked, and he makes a nice play onto his right foot to score the goal. But yeah, I was asking my friend, I was like, oh, you know, any other things? And he's like, yeah, it's a nice stadium. I was like, okay, thank you.
So maybe this guy just has a lot of personality, this friend.
No, he does. He does. He was just busy, you know, and you know, when you're busy and you're just kind of just trying to get the main points across, right? So I'm sure next time I see him for a meal of food or something, he'll tell me more in detail. So, and I'll report back to it on then.
And now also, like, rounding up the top teams in La Liga, Sevilla, they have 19 points. They beat Leganés 2-1. But so, yeah, just to round it up real quick one more time, Barcelona's on the top still with 28 points, 9 wins, 1 draw, no losses. And then Valencia, 4 points behind. Real Madrid currently 8 points behind. So if they beat Girona, they'll still be 5 points behind Barcelona, which will be fantastic. And then behind them, we've got Atletico Madrid and Sevilla. So some pretty usual suspects. Valencia doing much better this year than they did last year. And Sevilla still, you know, keeping in the running. So this is it's turning out to be an interesting league. But let's look back on the matches that happened this past week. First up, we want to talk about the Copa del Rey match with Real Murcia that took place in the Camp Nou on Tuesday. Barcelona won 3-0, as you probably know, with goals from Alcacer, Deulofeu, and Arnaiz. And it was, I think, a really notable performance from Arnaiz. That was probably he was the standout young player. His goal was a killer. And he had a couple other really good plays that I liked in like the 58th minute, combining with Dina and like a really good dribble through 3 defenders. He got the shot off, but it was like right at the goalkeeper's legs. So effectively, it had no teeth. But I think he really stood out in this match.
Yeah, definitely. I was impressed with the young guys. They brought it. Deulofeu also had a goal. Alcacer also had a goal. So really good for just everyone, just to get a little bit more confidence. And again, this is the exact type of result you want in a Copa del Rey match in Murcia on a Tuesday night. You know, 3-0, comfortable win. Don't have to use that much of the bench. And you were able to call up some players. Actually, I have a funny story for you about Murcia. So in my school, I was teaching north, south, east, and west in English. So, you know, we had this big map and I was like, okay, you know, I'm thinking of a country, you know, north of Spain, south of the UK, you know, and the kids would be like France. Okay. And this one girl, every time she would raise her hand, she would say Murcia. And I'm like, I'm thinking of a country, you know? And she's like, oh, okay. Cause obviously she's from Murcia and her parents obviously told her that Murcia is like the center of the world, right? So like the other thing I'd be like, the last one was the best one. I'm like, I'm thinking of a country that's south of Canada, north of Mexico. And the girl raised her hand. I'm like, okay, she's got this down. She's going to say United States. And she's like, Murcia? And I'm like, no. I was like, it's not Murcia. And the poor girl was like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, well, obviously you're from Murcia. Murcia must be an amazing place. So when I saw this last week, I wanted to tell you this story last week because it just always cracks me up. And I'm not talking like one time, two, like 5 questions in a row. She said Murcia to every country that I asked. So it was pretty funny. But anyway.
So for her, 1, Murcia is a country. And 2, it is the only country. It's north of everything. It's south of everything. It's east and west of everything. Everything surrounds Murcia.
Correct. It's the center of the world. Like I said, it's the 0.0 of the equator, right? That, oh. For her. So, yeah.
How old is
so
this girl?
Pretty funny. Like 8, 9. Something like this.
So
yeah,
cute.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if she's still doing that in like 5 years, we're going to start wondering, like, is she okay?
But yeah, right now, it won't be as cute either.
Yeah. But so who was your man of the match in this Copa del Rey game?
My man of the match, other than Messi, was Deuces. I think Deuces, like I said earlier, this was the perfect match for him to test. And, you know, it was like a testing ground for him that he can just get a little bit more confidence. His goal was really nice goal. His pass assist to himself, that's a really nice move that he did. But I think he just had a really good overall match. You know, he didn't try to do too much. He was in a lot of attacking plays. And overall, just a really good match for him. Who was your man of the match?
Oh, well, I guess we don't have to stipulate that it was other than Messi, since Messi didn't even make the trip to Murcia for this game. but in any case, my man of the match for this one was Mascherano, mostly because the hilarious thing about this game to me was how, for the most part, you've got guys coming up from the B team, you got guys who are sometimes getting the start with the first team, but not a whole lot. You know, Delafeu has been getting a lot of starts with the first team, but for the most part, your lineup for that match was second stringers, right? Guys who come in off the bench, or they like come in if there's an injury kind of thing. So for the most part, what you had were 10 guys trying to impress Valverde for playing time, and then you had Mascherano there to just kind of like clean up when things got hairy. So my man of the match was actually Mascherano, because he was just so chill out there, and it's like he was the babysitter, just like watching the kids run around like crazy. They weren't like linking up very well. They weren't really playing much like a team. You know, every time anyone got the ball, it's like they were trying to do something really special with it all on their own to like try and impress or whatever. And again, like, these guys don't necessarily play with each other a lot, so you can't expect them to have tons of chemistry already. Like, I understand that. But it just seemed like every time Denis Suarez got the ball, he tried to like do something. He wanted to make a run. He wanted to make a dribble. He wanted to make something happen. Like, you know, sometimes the best thing to do is to just pass it to a player who's in a better position, right? Isn't that the idea? But in any case, you just saw that kind of thing all through the game. And then, like, whenever things got a little bit tricky, you know, the ball started getting a little bit close to Barcelona's goal, Mascherano would just come in and take it. And like, okay, all right, that's enough. You've had your fun. Let me take the ball. Let's reset, and now we'll go forward. So my man of the match in that was Mascherano.
I like your analogy of the babysitter. I think that's a great analogy, because that's what it was, right? Like, he was like the older brother taking care of the younger kids. What about Vermaelen? Who knew that guy was still alive, right?
Yes. Talk about like trying to get attention, you know. He's like, I am still here. I can play in a Copa del Rey. And I mean, it is good that he's getting used, you know. I think it at least shows, you know, Valverde's intelligence to say, like, well, okay, obviously I'm not going to be playing Vermaelen in any La Liga games. He's not going to get any Champions League playing time. But at least I can give Umtiti, I can give PK a break with Vermaelen, you know, in these round of 32 Copa del Rey matches. So at least, you know, he's using him there. But yeah, seriously, where? Who knew?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, it's funny because, you know, I try to watch every match, especially since we're doing the podcast. But like, this match was one match I was like, I'm just going to listen to it on the radio. I'll be fine. Because this is a match that, you know, beforehand, we should win. We won. We were able to use the second string players, as we talked about. And of course, on the return match, probably use the same lineup and they should win again. So just the overall really good performance. For me, the most important thing is just, you know, getting the experience for Delafeu, Alcázar, Arnaiz, you know, all those guys, just to get some more playing time under their belt.
Now, do you think that Alcázar made a case for himself to get more playing time in, you know, the more serious matches, in La Liga matches?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think he should definitely get some more playing time, especially, like, I don't understand, like, why not just come in with like 10 minutes left in the game for Suarez, for example. Like, what's, I mean, it's, you know, Suarez is human. Like, he gets tired in the 80th minute. Just preserve him. You know, I don't use Alcázar for those last 10 minutes to give a little bit more push, because Alcázar has got a lot of minutes under his belt playing for Valencia before, and he can bring something. So let's use him and let's find a role for him like that, where we just use Suarez until the 80th minute and then put in Alcázar almost like a closer in baseball, you know, with fresh legs. I mean, we saw last night in the match, I know we're talking about this Copa del Rey match, but when they put Semedo in, what fresh legs can do just changes the game. You know, all of a sudden, Semedo was winning every 1v1 ball. He was getting to everything. And Alcázar can do almost the same thing. And he doesn't go offsides as often either. So that's also a nice thing.
Yeah, I think that would be a perfect way to use him at the minimum. You know, maybe giving him more starts, but at least bringing him in the last 10 minutes, give Suarez a rest and change things up for the last 10. But let's talk about the main event match of the last week. This was a really good match against Athletic Bilbao. I mean, the result was good. They went to the San Mamés in Basque Country, so that's always going to be a tough situation. You know, Athletic Bilbao, no matter how well or not well they're doing in the league, they're always going to come hard at Barcelona. They run hard. They're going to make you run hard. And it didn't disappoint. It was a fast-moving match. There was a lot of activity the whole time. It was contentious, you know, like there, but it wasn't dirty or anything, which is good. And of course, we got the kind of result that we hoped for. We got a 2-0 result with a goal from Messi in the 36th minute and another one from Pauli in the 90 plus. So getting into this match, what were your general thoughts?
I think my first thought was the lineup. That was the first thing. You know, going to this 4-4-2, again, I would just substitute Andre Gomez for Semedo and push Sergio Roberto up, because we know how your boy Blue Eyes, he is so good when he cuts in. That's something that is like undervalued, that he can do really well. And he did it a bunch of times last night. He wasn't tested too much. But I think my first thought was the lineup. You know, everyone else, okay, you know. And Brian, I can't believe I'm about to say this. You better mark this in Barca talk history.
Okay.
I was actually glad that Pauli started last night.
You were so relieved to see Pauli in the lineup.
I mean, I'm serious. I cannot believe I'm saying this, but it's true. Because Athletic Bilbao, especially their forwards with Raul Garcia and Andres, and just the team in general, they're almost kind of like a team. Like I used to play in basketball, they're a team that just throws elbows, like left and right, you know? When you go for a header, there's an elbow in the back. When you go over here, there's an elbow in here, you know? And Pauli, you know, he's physical specimen, man. Like he gives us that strength in the middle that we normally don't have. And he was contentious. And you can see that Athletic Bilbao was not used to his strength and speed and ability. So Brian, mark it down. I was glad that Pauli played last night and started.
All right. Episode 50. For the first time, Gabriel is glad Pauli was in the lineup. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point because, the way that he would deal with those elbows is much different and much more, you know, head-on than, for instance, if Iniesta had started. It would have been a different response, and he would have dealt with it in a different way and maybe not as successfully.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you know how they always say, like, guerrilla warfare, right? You use the weakness to your strength and all this stuff. But sometimes you just got to street fight it out. And we were able to do that with this type of lineup. But, you know, I think that's why he picked Andre Gomez, just because physically he's tall, he's big, he occupies that thing as a winger on the 4-4-2. But, yeah, so that was my first thought was the lineup. What was your next thought about the game, watching the game or anything prior to the game?
Well, okay, it was weird for me to watch the game because, again, I was over at Phoenix Landing in Boston, or Cambridge, rather, and I was there with all my friends and Megan, and I was essentially the only one actually watching the game, at least for the whole time, because my friends, I love them to death, are either not interested or, like, actively disinterested. My one friend, Dave, he's a great guy, and he's been a close friend of mine for 20-plus years. He's wonderful. He is all about professional wrestling, and he doesn't care about any real sport, you know, where, like, any non-scripted sporting event. So he's just sitting there on his phone completely, just, like, taking digs every few minutes. Like, oh, did he do a thing? Did he make the kick? What happened? Was that exciting? Dude, just... Yes, that was exciting. That save that Ter Stegen just made was exciting. Shut up. So it was a little weird for me to watch the game. But yeah, my general thoughts were just that it was a good game. I liked how... Just like as an entertainment spectacle, you know, Athletic Bilbao and Barcelona, they never disappoint. It's always a fun, high-tempo, high-paced match. And I was very impressed with Ter Stegen, and actually I was a little bit impressed with Gomez. There were two moments that I want to pick out for Gomez. Well, this is almost kind of like giving him a participation award. He did exactly what he always does, right? Which is kind of like not nothing, but not anything particularly special. But he did have two moments that I think were notable, and I'll point them out. One was in like roughly the 15th minute. He was playing the ball out of the defensive half. He played it out of the box to Alba. He got into space for the return. He got the return. He held it up nicely And then he sent it forward again to an advancing Jordi Alba. And that was a good play. It got broken up because Alba sent a bad cross-field ball after that. But then also in the 60th or so minute, it was a counter started by Sergi Roberto, my boy, Swiss knife. And he sent it to Gomez. Gomez puts it to Messi. And Gomez actually kept running into the box, which was a smart thing. And Messi made just like an absolutely perfect pass to get it to him. And then, you know, he screwed it up. His first touch was like a little heavy. And Nunez broke it up. Also, he made a good tackle. Nunez did. But those were two moments where Gomez actually like stood out and like did a good thing. But yeah, otherwise, he was pretty much standard vanilla Sky Gomez. Just like, exactly. Not great, but not terrible.
I mean, you saw the difference. I mean, I was, as soon as they put Semedo in and they pushed Roberto up, I mean, you saw the difference. Just how good Semedo was playing on defense. He got to every 1v1 ball. All of a sudden, the guys were like, on Athletic Bilbao, like, oh, this guy is super fast. Like, we can't do this move now, you know? And he just brought a different dynamic. And that's, I would just prefer to have Semedo start. Again, Gomez, you highlighted these two outstanding plays, but I mean, I want more, you know? I mean, he should be either really like dynamic attacking or dynamic defense, not just like a six across the board on everything, you know? And because that's not what we want as a Barca a fan, you know, we want something more dynamic. So yeah, he didn't screw up and so forth, but again, he was just in the way again, just in the, every time I see him, I just like, oh my God, is this guy really on our team? I just can't believe it.
Yeah. So, he's either in the way or he's just not sure where to go. And that was the thing about that 60th minute one where he actually like gave the ball to Messi and then made a run into the box. It actually seemed like he had purpose in life for the first time in a while. You know, he knew where he was supposed to go and he went there.
Yeah, and also that pass by Messi was amazing. Like, it's perfectly weighted, perfectly goes through. And, you know, yeah, so Gomez had a bright spot there. But at the same time, like, you know, it's just, you know, who knows what Sergio Roberto and Semedo would have done the whole game. You know, we could have had more opportunities. And maybe Athletic Bilbao would have had less chances on goal against us. So,
yeah, I really wish that Semedo would have started on right back and Sergi would have been playing where Gomez played.
Exactly. We would have had a little bit more possession because Roberto knows how to possess the ball with Rakitic. You saw they've been playing together for a while. They know how to ping the ball back to each other to keep possession. And so that would have helped, you know, with the defensive possession against Athletic Bilbao because they did have some opportunities. And of course, my man of the match, other than Messi, was Ter Stegen. And Ter Stegen was outstanding. Unbelievable, made crucial saves. And so, Brian, I have a question for you. Is he a top three goalkeeper in the world now?
I'd say so. Well, okay, here's the thing. I don't watch enough football to be able to say for sure whether I think he's a top three goalkeeper in the world, but he's getting a lot of playing time for Germany while Neuer has been out. He's obviously on one of the top clubs in the world, and he's obviously a great goalkeeper. He's just been getting better, and he's only going to keep getting better. I think he's easily somewhere in the top five.
I mean, this is the thing I saw on Twitter was that, you know, all our goalkeepers have been underrated. Like Victor Valdez, he was a great goalkeeper, but for some reason, he was considered not that great of a goalkeeper, but he was really good and top tier good, you know? And I think with Ter Stegen, when he first came to Barcelona, you know, we always knew about his passing ability, his first touch, how he was physical, but I think he just was the last thing to come across was to be a leader and to also be a shot stopper like he's doing now because he had three of them last night that were just like, you know, as we talked maybe in other podcasts, like how the level, right, against like, for example, Olympiacos when we talked about last week with the free kick. Ter Stegen is making these clean sheet saves that are keeping the game. And we're having the best defensive output that we've had in such a long time. And that is also leading to the points, right? Because remember last year, we would score a goal, the other team would score a goal right back. And all of a sudden, we're in a tie game situation. So for me, Ter Stegen was my man of the match other than Messi. Brian, who was yours?
Well, it's similar on the defensive end. I have to say Umtiti. Now, just to go back to your man of the match other than Messi, Ter Stegen, I mean, we got a good result, right? We got a 2-0 win, which is fantastic, but it would have been a 3 or 4-2 win for Athletic Bilbao had it not been for Ter Stegen. just the saves he made alone saved that game. So yeah, the goals were great and beautiful, but man, those everything that happened defensively to keep the clean sheet was so critical to maintaining this win. And so for me, the man of the match, other than Messi, was Umtiti for similar reasons, right? Because although a lot of chances got through for Ter Stegen to be tested, and he came up well, the ones that didn't were mostly held off by Umtiti. You know, every time that ball came into the box, there he was, clearing it, making clearances, breaking up plays, making tackles. You know, of course, you know, out on the wings, there was some also good defensive play from Sergi Roberto. And I think actually Sergi Roberto is becoming a better defender than he was last year. I still want to see him, you know, move into midfield and attacking more often. But he's a better right back than he was last year on the defensive end of things. But in any case, whenever the ball came into the center, you know, it was the Umtiti show. It's almost like PK is there backing up Umtiti now rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, think about our middle now, you know, almost like, you know, in baseball, they always say the depth or the strength of your defense is up the middle, the pitcher, the catcher, the shortstop, or the second baseman. So think of that analogy for our team. So now we have Ter Stegen in goal, Umtiti, PK, great combo tandem center backs, and then Busquets on top of them. So for me, that's, you know, best in the world almost, you know, it's very formidable, very great skill on the ball, very good at heading, physical, all the things you would really want. So Umtiti, as we've noted before, my man crush, he is killing it. He is just simply having a great year so far. As they say on the radio, when I was listening to the radio last night, Monsieur Umtiti, Monsieur.
Monsieur Umtiti.
Yeah. Yeah, so overall, just, you know, like we highlighted earlier, you know, normally maybe a couple of years ago in the 4-3-3 would have had more possession and Athletic Bilbao would have had less chances. And now, you know, the style's different. It's going to be a lot of back and forth. But I want to highlight something that for me that Pauly did that was amazing. Not amazing, but like why I was glad he was there. There were so many times where he held the ball where he was on a 50-50 and he just pushed the guy off. And sometimes Athletic Bilbao, I think, always psychologically thought or think that they're physically better than us, you know, like they're going to go stronger at us. And when Pauly was able to do that in the beginning of the game, that set the tone for the rest of the match. So overall, very, very happy with the result. You know, again, no injuries, clean sheet, and we get the points. What else can you ask for?
Yeah, exactly. What else can you possibly ask for? And another goal for Messi, which is always fun.
Exactly. But, you know, the Messi goal that first, I mean, if you watch it, just, I mean, I just don't understand how he sees these angles at his height. You know what I'm saying? Like if you watch the replay, the pass that he gives into the corner to come back to, it's just, and he always has almost the perfect weight to the ball. Like, it's never too fast. It's never too soft. It's always perfect. And that goal is just a great, you know, Messi right now, he always does that lately. He just comes through the center of the box and he came unmarked. No one marked him through that box. And he just had a clean look at goal and he made the best of it. And that was a good goal, 1-0 in the 36th minute. Did you see the pass that he set up everything with? I mean, I think at the same time, BN also did their graphics thing at the same time, because I was about to throw my TV out the window when they started doing that thing. Like live. I was like, no, take it off. I can't see, you know? So, yeah.
Well, we have to hand it to Jordi Alba on that play also, because I know that you've had a lot of complaints. And of course, I'm sure many of us have had these complaints about Jordi Alba's inability to get a cross in. And at least this time, you know, it was kind of a desperate attempt, but he finally got a cross in and it was, you know, he had to drop it back because there was no place else for the ball to go. It was about to go over the goal line, but he finally got a cross in. And just to the perfect spot, and Messi put it away. And yeah, that angle was just absolutely insane.
I mean, Alba is really good at doing that cross where he cuts it back. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, he still needs a lot of help with the cross in the air. That's the one he needs a lot more practice on. But have you ever remember the Clasico last year? Alba did that drop back drag pass to Messi. And so he's got that pass down. So great goal all around. I mean, everyone had a part in it, and you know, it was great to get the goal, obviously, before halftime as well.
Yeah. Now, let's look ahead to what's coming this week. We got two matches coming up. The first one is going to be happening on Tuesday on a spooky day. Is Halloween a thing in Spain, Gabriel?
It's starting to. We have the first off. So people are starting to use that 31st. They're like, hey, we have to dress up and we have the day off tomorrow. Why not? Let's go party. So ever since I've been here, it's become bigger and bigger. So I'm definitely going to dress up because at my school, my kids are, you know, they're going to dress up as well. They love to dress up. So yeah, it's definitely getting to become a bigger and bigger thing here in Spain.
And kind of like the Americanized version of Halloween, not the Catholic, like All Souls Day kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's definitely becoming more Americanist. The only thing that's missing are the women haven't caught on to being the naughty, quote-unquote, costumes yet, like in the U.S., right? So, like, naughty school teacher or naughty, I don't know, cat, right? You know how they Americans love to do this for Halloween. That still has yet to come to Spain, so still
okay,
waiting.
Okay, so next year I'm hoping to see more slutty Guardia Civil officers.
Exactly. Naughty police officer, naughty librarian. Okay, here we go.
Yeah. I always thought it would be funny to have, like, you know, naughty Amish woman, right? But anyway, like, what would that look like? Anyway, so on the spooky day of Halloween, Tuesday, October 31st, we're going to be squaring off against Olympiacos, and this match will be in Athens, Greece, on the Olympiakos home pitch of Karaiskakis Stadium.
I think you missed one S in there.
There might be a missing S, yeah. I'll try and get that right for next time. So you did the workup on this. What are the preview notes for this match?
Yeah, I mean this match, I'm not really worried about it. We should win. We should get the victory. Last time we played Olympiakos, we were a man down thanks to PK. So we, you know, this game should be pretty comfortable. I'm more curious of what lineup he's going to use, if he's going to use a quote-unquote B lineup, because we're already at top of the table. We're going to win the table. This game is almost like a throwaway that we could almost use the same lineup we used in the Copa del Rey match if we wanted to, almost, because we've won every match. The other teams are fighting for position. Again, I know he probably won't do that, but I'm just curious to see what type of lineup. Other than that, I don't really have any other players to profile. Last time we did I think his name was Seba, and he had more yellow cards than goals. So again, I'm not too worried. And he didn't even play. And maybe we should start an Olympiacos podcast.
Yeah, an Olympiacos podcast. Because, you know, we need to make more podcasts. I don't do nearly enough podcasting in a week.
Exactly. And of course, Olympiacos is the powerhouse of the Greek Premier League. So we, you know, it's a win-win.
That's true. That's true.
No, but like I said, I'm not too worried about this match. We're going to go through. We'll be fine. I'm probably going to watch other Champions League matches that are more highly touted. Like, I'm more interested in the Real Madrid-Tottenham game, especially since that's being played in London. Atletico-Chelsea, I think, are playing again their counter matchup. So there's other matches that I'm more interested in. I'll probably follow this, but I'm not too worried about this match at all.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I think that Valverde really should go for he should give some other guys a chance. Like, maybe Alcacer should get the start in this one. You know, maybe even sit Messi out for this one. Because, yeah, there's no way we're not going to win that group. It's, you know, Olympiacos is, as we saw in the first leg, is not that formidable an opponent. I mean, of course, Messi always wants to play. So if he wants to play, he'll play. But, like, I don't think we really need him. We don't even really need a win. If we could just, like, get a 0-0 draw, that would be fine, right? I mean, I know that's not really the Barcelona way of thinking. You know, you want to go in and get a win, and you want to score goals and all that sort of stuff. But from the, I don't know, more larger strategic frame of mind, you could just go in there with a slightly weaker side and be perfectly happy with a draw. Is all I'm saying.
Exactly. I mean, I would just use this also as like a training lab to try a new formation or new tactics or new ideas. You know, this is a type of game. It's a throwaway game. I mean, if we win great. If we lose, it doesn't really matter either. I mean, we're still going to go through as the top of the table in this group. So not too worried.
Yeah. And it's such a luxury to be in that position. So why not take advantage of it? And yeah, try some experimentation, try some things out, see how they go. Now, the other match, this is going to be a harder match, I think. This is against Sevilla in La Liga next Saturday, November 4th. But this is a home game. They're going to be playing in Barcelona at the Camp Nou, so that's good. And of course, Sevilla is looking good this year. You know, they started off really strong, and now, you know, other teams have kind of gotten over them on the table, but they're still looking good. And I think that this, even though it's in Barcelona, they are going to give us some problems. So what's the preview workup on this? What's the scouting report?
Well, they've been a little bit up and down this season so far. Obviously, bringing back your boy, what's his name again? The Navas. They brought back Navas, and they also have Nolito. My player to watch is Nolito, just because he always gets up for these games. Before, when he was with Celta, he had some really great goals against Barca. So he really brings up his game against Barcelona, also because we were flirting with him a couple seasons ago to bring him in. But I feel more comfortable that this is at home, and obviously using the field dimension, all that type of thing. But again, Sevilla has been playing up and down. They're trying to find their footing still with their new coach. They had Sampaoli last year, who was a really demanding coach, and this year they have Berizzo. And I don't know anything about Berizzo, but I just know that a couple weeks ago in Champions League, they got hammered in Moscow 5-1, something like this, which normally a Sevilla team should do better, especially against a Russian team in Champions League. So we'll see. You know, they always bring it to us. They always look to have their best games. And I also think that Sonzi, one of their midfielders, I always forget how to say his name. I think he's out injured as well. But again, we should be able to win this match. I'm looking at like a 1-0 or 1-1 type of game for this one.
Yeah, and you got to wonder how their midweek Champions League game is going to affect them, because they don't have a squad quite as deep as we do, but they're still competing in the Champions League, and they're in third place in their group. So, you know, are they going to try and get good players in there? So that makes me wonder, are they going to be tired come Saturday? I don't know. Like, there's a lot of interesting variables that could play into that situation.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good point, because, you know, they don't have a squad as deep, and they have to go play in Champions League, and they need to get a victory. So they might put all their eggs in that basket for that match on, I think it's Tuesday or Wednesday, and then come to the Camp Nou with maybe their B squad, just to kind of get through Champions League qualifying and sacrifice this game for La Liga. So we'll see what they end up doing.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. That's it for this week. Thanks for all the comments that you sent in. We're glad that we could have responded to all of those. So continue to be a part of the show. New listeners, anyone else, give us your comments, questions, topics you'd like us to discuss. You can visit us at BarcaTalk.net to find any channel that you would like to communicate with us on. Thank you again for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and spread the word about Barca Talk to all your friends. Until next time, I am Brian Henderson.
I'm Gabriel Quiroga.
And this has been Barca Talk. Visca Barça.
Visca Barça.